that guy?
Hello.
Oh, you sound weird now.
What? Do I just, it's a different microphone I'm using.
Yeah, you sound like further away.
But I mean, like, it doesn't sound like I'm just like you were sounding like you were like in a machine, like it was so distorted and everything. It was like some like spooky deal. This just sounds like shitty audio quality, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just shitty audio quality.
Perfect.
Yeah, I have to use the internal microphone because I don't know what the fuck is going on in my life.
Well, it's weird that your microphone would make me sound different.
I think it's something to do with, well, it's not that. I can't use my regular microphone without the mixer, and I think it's the mixer that might have been doing it.
Okay.
So, I think in conclusion, I don't trust the dog.
I wouldn't. I would never trust a pug.
Yeah, well, you and George Washington, let me tell you.
Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Mike. We are apparently up and running here on this program. Thank you for joining us. We're going to discuss MMA and Stuff this week. I figured we could start, like we usually do, with a quick review of the weekend's past shows. Let's start with the first one. That was Bellator 200. The 200th show in Bellator's history, headlined by Gegard Mousasi versus Rafael Carvalho. Is the headline for UFC. I'm sorry, Bellator 200. It took place at the Wembley Arena in London, England on May 25th. In the main event, Mousasi defeated Carvalho to win the middleweight title in Bellator. He won by TKO with strikes on the ground at 3:35 of the first. Kind of got a takedown, took Carvalho's back and just ground and pounded him on the ground, and it was over. Easy win for Mousasi.
Hit a button.
Hello.
Hello? Oh, there you are. Okay, sorry.
You're way distant now.
Yeah, sorry. I'm fucking around with this thing. I'm hitting buttons I didn't mean to hit.
Did you see Bellator 200?
Ooh, that sounds better for me. So loud. Did I see Bellator 200? I did see some of it. I have vague recollections of it. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I can refresh your memory. Is Mousasi the best middleweight on earth?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, now that Michael Bisping is retired, for sure Gegard Mousasi is the guy I think of at 185 pounds. And I go, fuck, man. He would just... I say that in jest, but he did beat Chris Weidman. I mean, it's not like he's shitty. Like he could have been, but he's not. No.
Okay. After the fight, there was talk of Mousasi versus Rory Markham. Holy shit. Rory
wow.
McDonald? That would make more
is Rory,
sense.
Is Rory Markham alive?
As far as I know, I've not seen an obit for him lately.
I feel like he has some sort of like heroin-related deal.
I'll find out. What do you think of Rory McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi?
I don't give a flying fuck.
Okay.
I don't know. Something about Rory McDonald does never excite me. Just whatever he does, it will forever just be whatever. You're just there. This is the only dude that has like these legendary fights, and I still am bored by him. The man is just I hate saying black hole of charisma because that's been overdone, but he's like a. Like a sewer of charisma.
Ooh, even grosser. Rory Markham was arrested for aggravated assault in Chicago on November 2nd, 2013. Later that same year, he was arrested in Iowa for felony assault. since that time. I don't have any information on Rory Markham. Perhaps he's impressive. Huh.
Well, you know, we can only hope. He's a stuntman also.
Yeah. He fought again in 2016.
For Crystal SFL Lake. 58. Okay, he's a local guy, right. Remember some of this, yeah, personal life. Oh, he's a trained actor. Yes, he's trained in acting, they say here. I don't know where I got the heroin thing from, but yeah.
His mugshots, he does not look super healthy.
Well, he doesn't. He's got a face like that, anyways. Like, I think he's got a pox-marked face.
Yeah, but so. I don't see much else. He missed that. He missed weight by a lot against Nate Diaz back in the day. Anyway,
he still got his ass beat. Wow, we just spent way more time on Rory Markham than even Rory Markham would have expected.
Michael Page defeated David Rickles in the semi-main event. This was declared a TKO at 43 seconds of the second round via retirement. David Rickles just quit in the middle of the fight. He took a punch to the face, was getting beat up on the feet, was no match for Page standing, and just quit in the middle of the fight after he took a right hand to, like, the left eye socket.
Yeah, it was actually kind of funny because Rickles fought in a way that he very clearly conveyed, I don't like your karate stuff. I think this is kind of dorky or, like, whatever. Like, not a lot of respect for MVP. I'm trying not to use any homophobic slurs, you see. But, you know, he kind of disrespected him and mocked him a little bit. And he was getting his ass beat. I mean, clearly MVP was just better. Just on athletics alone, you just watch this. There's just, like, in a million years, Rickles isn't going to do shit. But he got in there, and then and he's getting booed the whole time, right? Because they're in London. This is MVP's territory or whatever that is. I don't know, territory. And, you know, the crowd's all going nuts for him, and they're booing Rickles. And then, like, Rickles gets this cut above his eye, and MVP kind of motions at it, like, aha, I got you in the eye. And Rickles kind of, like, looks at the cut, like, somehow senses the cut. And he just quits. He's just like, yeah, fuck it, I'm out. I did it. Fuck you guys. You want to see me get hurt? Fuck you. I'm not giving you the satisfaction of this. He knew the fight was over. Like, this, like, it was clear that, I mean, it was a bad cut. Like, that thing would have been stopped, I think, anyways. But Rickles just took that moment, and there was just, like, this anti-climax to it that reminds me of a 1970s Southern heel, even though I don't really know what the fuck that means, but it feels like that's what they would have done. Like, I got my cut, and I escaped, except for not with the title this time, but kind of with, because the crowd didn't get thick. He denied people happiness. Like a true heel, he denied the crowd what they came to see, and they can't complain because he didn't do anything illegal.
It's like the finish when, like, the heel, I remember Money Inc. would do this a lot against the Natural Disasters. They would just walk out of the match and lose by count out, but keep the title.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, that's basically what it was. It was kind of like a deliberate count out. I just laughed, and I really enjoyed my life in that moment when I saw that. It was really good.
It was a good win for Page. I mean, by far, Rickles is the best guy who's ever fought. And granted, Rickles is a lightweight, kind of a journeyman guy, but Rickles is 14-5 in Bellator. It's not like he's a bad fighter. He wins most of his fights, and usually he's pretty entertaining. And he had nothing at all for Page. And I thought maybe Rickles would, like, at least try and, you know, take it to the ground a little bit, or at least get it up against the cage and get a clinch or something, but there was none of that, and he just got smoked.
Yeah, he was in there, and it seemed like he just didn't know what to do. He had no game. And it wasn't just like it was like, oh, you know, MVP is, he's so difficult, you know, he's so athletic and unique. But it was like Rickles had never even thought about the idea of a game plan. Like, there was no, like, nobody seemed to be aware of what he was going to be fighting, because, like, he was in there, he was just wandering around, he didn't know what, like, a guy like MVP, you'd have some idea in your head, like, hey, you know,
this is the way we got to beat this guy. You know, like, you don't have to think that about certain types of, like, you don't have to think that about John Jones. Because John Jones is Jones. Well, okay, maybe you do with John Jones. But like, some guys, you know, you don't have to think. But, like, tricky guys like this, you want to have a game plan. And Rickles is just fucking stuck his thumb up his ass and quit.
Any thoughts on who Paige should fight next?
I have no idea.
Okay, because Daly was the talk, but I don't know if Daly is still employed by Bellator because they didn't seem to get along very well at the end there, especially after that Fitch fight.
I didn't realize during that Fitch fight until recently that, like, as the fight was going on, Daly was, like, verbally mocking Fitch.
Yeah.
He was booing John Fitch. And fuck you, Paul Daly. Just fuck you. You're such a bitch. Jeez, I don't like him.
We also had Aaron Chalmers defeating Ash Griffiths by guillotine choke at 154 in the first. I guess Chalmers is some, like, reality star in England. He's on, like, their version of Jersey Shore. So you have that. Mike Shipman defeated Carl Noon. Kate Jackson defeated Anastasia Yankova by unanimous decision. And Phil Davis opened the show knocking out Linton Vassell with a nasty head kick at 105 of the third round. Probably the most spectacular win of Davis's career. It was like a knockout head kick where Vassell went down and was limp, and Davis landed one shot on the ground before the ref could get there, and it was over.
And thus, this recap was over as well.
Moving along, this past weekend we also had UFC Liverpool. This is a fight night show headlined by Stephen Thompson versus Darren Till at the Echo Arena on May 27th. In the main event, we had Darren Till weighing in at 174.5 pounds, defeating Stephen Thompson by unanimous decision. Scorecards were 48-47, 49-46, 49-46. Not a whole lot happened in this fight. Till got a knockdown at the end, like in the middle of the fifth round. Otherwise, it was both guys being real tentative, real cautious. Till landed a few leg kicks and probably did more damage than Thompson and landed a few more strikes. But a lot of people thought it was some hometown reffing. Thompson said he thought he won four rounds. I know some people scored it 48-47 for Thompson with him winning the first three, but it's one of those fights where it was like nothing really happened. So you could judge it either way, and it would be hard to say what guy did more damage. But if you take the knockdown and you look at Thompson's legs, I guess you would give it to Till, but it wasn't like this dominant performance by Till where this is going to make him a breakout star, especially where he missed weight by 3.5 pounds.
Yeah, I would say that, like, in the global sense, the right guy won, because Darren Till deserved the win more than Rory McDonald would have. Yeah, or Rory Markham, or Stephen Thompson, or anybody he's fighting right now. Yeah. But, yeah, because, I mean, look, he did get the knockdown at least, and that was the only thing that approximated an actual fight. Otherwise, at one point I started fucking around, and I just hit the 30-second skip button on my remote to see what it would look like. I did that for three rounds, and every single fucking time I hit the button, it was the same image. It was just Till with his hands out and his fucking fingers pointing right at Stephen Thompson, and kind of moving forward, and Thompson kind of moving back, and they just did the same fucking thing over and over and over again, and it sucked. And I blame all this on Stephen Thompson at this point. I'm sorry, it's not anyone else, it's him. Because when every one of your fucking fights is the same thing, it's not just that they all suck, it's that they suck in the same fucking way. This is on him. He fights like a piece of shit. He's boring, and if he's not going to win, then fuck, I don't want to see him on my television. Let him go to Bellator. He's got that Bellator feel to me. be good for them. Then they could fight MVP, and we could just see them fucking dance around each other. And then some asshole that probably would have been me, like if I was like 15 years younger, on some fucking forum trying to like school everybody, like, no, man, this was actually really smart and beautiful shit. You had to be really knowledgeable about the technique involved, and it was beautiful if you just know what's going on, man. You just don't understand. That's what we got to look forward to.
I mean, to me, the issue with Thompson is he likes to counter. He wants somebody to rush in, and he can hit him with a jab or a front kick, whatever it might be. And guys have wised up to him and just not going to rush in and do that. And it ends up being kind of a stalemate and a boring fight. That's essentially what happened with those Woodley fights, except for, you know, the one or two rounds that somebody landed a big shot.
And you know what? Double fuck you to Stephen Thompson on this one. Mm. Same with the Tyrone Woodley fights, because think about it. Your style is this whole, like, I evade, you know, I'm evasive. I avoid punishment, and I can dish it out, and blah, blah, blah. But, like, every fucking fight you're in, if somebody just hits you hard, you fall down every time. You have no chin. It's just a matter of time. You'll never win a five-round fight, ever. You punk-ass Nazi bitch.
Post-fight, so I'll cut a promo. This was in his hometown of Liverpool. I know you're familiar with that city.
What's it feel like to get that victory on your win column? Did you expect it to go the distance? Did you think it was going to be like that all the way through?
I did, yeah. I played games. I know Stephen thinks I'm an aggressive fighter. I am, but I'm a very calm and collected aggressive fighter. So I knew with Stephen, I didn't even tell me that standoff fight, because he's so good at moving in, moving out. Got to be made of a kick, so I thought, if I land, I'll finish him, but I'm going to show him that my Muay Thai is just as good as Jack. He is a phenomenal striker. In all my life of fighting right then, I've been fighting since I was 13. I've never fought a striker like that, so I have to use every part of my brain to figure him out, because I couldn't, and still in the end, you know, one lucky last stand maybe edged it, but it was like that amazing. But all them doubters, yes, say him what now, now,
and that was Darren Till after his five-round fight that went to decision, where he missed weight by 3.5 pounds and landed about 30 strikes total in the entire fight. Very exciting.
Hey, and I'll give it to him. The crowd seemed to like him. They were all kind of they were into it.
He knew how to get a pop in his hometown, yes. But a little too fired up there, considering the performance and barely eking out this win.
Oh, yeah, but think about it, though. I mean, we can look at this fight and just think, boy, what a waste of a Sunday afternoon that was. And just move on with our life. But for Darren Till, he just beat the best fighter he's ever fought, the number two or three guy in the world, and he beat him in his hometown. Like, that's a huge moment. Like, even if you kind of squeak by, that's like a, holy fuck, I fucking did it type of deal. And so, I'll give it to him. It doesn't mean the fight didn't suck ass. But at least we got a guy, another guy in the top five, you know, who you can legit go, all right, you know, because Darren Till, look, he beat him. He beat a top-level guy. So on there's something that tells you, go, all right, he's not a fluke. He hasn't just been, you know, getting kind of lucky or whatever. Like, there might be something real there.
Sure.
So it's time to give him somebody that'll probably whoop his ass next. But maybe we have the next British star. I hate that tattoo on his neck, though. It just looks so fucking dumb to me.
What is it?
I don't know. I just think a tattoo on your neck is stupid. Unless you have, like, tattoos everywhere else. But if you only have it just on your neck, that's the only tattoo you have, it looks so weird to me. I don't like it. It's like you went in there one day and you said to them, just give me the one thing you can do that'll guarantee I don't get to work in polite society. But nothing else. Just the one thing just to fuck it up. Like, if you get your face tattooed, you finish with that. Nobody starts with their first tattoo being on their forehead. Like, that's a big commitment if you never had a tattoo.
It would not be a week in MMA if we didn't have to talk about weight cutting. So he missed weight by 3.5 pounds, still did. And then they decided that the fight would go on if, on the day of the fight, Till weighed in at no more than 188 pounds. So the fight is, you know, contracted at 170, and he's got a pound to play with. But they said Thompson's team told Till if he weighed 188 on the day of the fight, it could go on. So apparently Till got up to 192 pounds, had to cut back down to 188, and then start putting weight back on again. Till forfeited 30% of his purse to Thompson, and ended up winning the fight in the end. But it's like, there was some stat, I think I sent it to you, like in 14 and 15, 20 guys missed weight, and then in 16 and 17 each year, 60 guys missed weight. So it tripled, and that was coincided with the earlier weigh-ins. So you've got three times as many guys missing weight. Should they do away with the early weigh-ins? Like, what's the solution here?
Well, I got to give credit to Darren Till. This is pretty good. First guy I can think of in a long time that's had the double weigh-in.
I think Anthony Johnson had to do that for the Belfort fight, too.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Funny, I saw somebody tweet it, and I loved it. And they said, he weighed in so heavy on the second weigh-in that he would not have been eligible to fight at middleweight, and yet here we all are cheering for it. It's like, yeah, that's a really fucked up part of the sport. I guess it just makes no sense. I know why we do it. I get it. But there's no other sport where they're like, all right, man, it's the night right before the World Cup. What are you going to do? You got to get really drunk and play hungover. It makes no sense. But we do it. Yeah, that stat you sent me about the number of people missing weight, I mean, that is stunning. And if that's really the case, I'll say this. I don't know. When it comes to whether we keep early weigh-ins or not, to me, the only thing I would care about is have we seen, like, a noticed, decrease in concussions or something. Like, to me, that's being done for health reasons. And if it's being done for health reasons, that's the only thing that matters. The other thing I wonder about is, because that timeline also is when USADA came about, and I wonder how much that's played a role with people, missing weight.
Oh, like the IV ban and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm wondering, IV ban and, maybe just guys aren't getting that, maybe in the past they would use like a little diuretic type of thing 2 or 3 weeks out to start shedding a little weight, and now guys aren't doing it, and think about it, in like 2 years, if you figure your average fighter's fought, maybe 4 or 5 times in 2 years, it's not like they have a lot of practice with this shit of learning to cut weight the natural way. Like, they're all kind of just restarting and going back to the Wild Wild West again, and fucking New Jersey probably won't even adopt whatever they figure out for the next one.
The rumor is that Till had like a family emergency and that he blamed that on the reason he missed weight. So apparently his weight cut got screwed up because I saw something that his girlfriend was in the hospital or something, but I don't know if that's true or if that's horseshit, but that was floated around there for a while.
Look,
who should Darren Till fight next?
Let's say that's the case.
Yeah.
I've never liked that as an excuse. I hate this shit where people do their weight cuts over multiple days. To me, the actual weight cutting portion should be no more than basically about 12 to 15 hours. That's how long you should be without water. I never understand these people doing it for a long time. So that tells me that, if you're missing weight because of an emergency, what do you mean emergency? Really, she went to the hospital like the same night you were cutting weight? Really? Like, that's really bad fucking timing. You sure you should be fighting? And also, you're just sweating a little bit. You could do that while she sits there. It's not like she really needs you. Anyway, as for who should fight next, I have no idea. Kamaru Usman is a...
Usman, yeah.
That's one of those things where... Yeah, it makes sense, and that's how Joe Silva used to always book it, and... It's a pretty logical thing to do. So, yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, get one of them out of here. In the co-main event, we had Neil Magny defeating Craig White by TKO with knees and punches at 4:32 of the first.
Yeah, Magny just whooped him, which he should, given the guy's coming on super short notice and all this. But yeah, Magny, look, he looked really great, and all of a sudden, like, there's some stat that pops up where it's like he's got like as many wins as almost anybody in welterweight history. I'm like, how does this happen?
He fought a lot. He fights a lot, man. He averages like 4 fights a year. He's one of those like Sam Alvey guys. You don't realize how often they're fighting.
Sam Alvey fights on Friday.
I know. Arnold Allen defeated Mads Burnell by submission. It was a front choke at 2:41 of the third. Kind of a interesting fight. Allen lost the first two rounds handily, and then got this choke out of nowhere towards the end of the third.
Yeah, it was all right. I kind of remember it a little.
Allen has a good mustache.
Don't they all, though? I mean, don't they all in their own way?
Nope, that's why I mentioned it. Maquan Amirkhani defeated Jason Knight by split decision. Interesting scores here. We had 27-30, 29-28, and 29-28. Not a good night for Hit Diaz here. He had a knockdown, I think, in the first. And then just got, like, he was pulling guard in the second and third and got taken down a couple times and was trying to get submissions from his back, but couldn't really get anywhere and kind of got outpointed by Amirkhani here.
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing there. To the extent that I remember the fight, I just remember thinking, this is not an effective way to win a cage fight in 2018. Good job, dumbass.
He is Hit Diaz. Claudio Silva defeated Nordine Taleb, rear naked choke, 4:31 of the first. And Darren Stewart defeated Eric Spicely by TKO at 1:47 of the second.
And Tom Breeze won his fight.
I know. Old man Dan Kelly lost by TKO.
It was so weird because I remember last week kind of joking about Tom Breeze and be like, you know, who's Tom Breeze and all this stuff. And then, like, as soon as I saw him on television, for whatever reason, my brain just went, oh, I know that guy. And then I looked online and somebody's like, this first fight in 700-some days. I'm like, okay, I don't feel so bad now for having not totally remembered Tom Breeze. Good-looking guy, though. Good body.
Huh. I'll have to check out some Google images of him later.
Oh, yeah.
Lena Landsberg defeated Gina Mazzani. Carlo Pedersoli Jr. defeated Brad Scott. Jillian Robertson defeated Molly McCann. And Elias Theodora opened the show on Fight Pass, defeating Trevor Smith by unanimous decision. Performances of the night went to Arnold Allen, Claudio Silva, Darren Stewart, and Tom Breeze. No fight of the night was awarded.
I really want to know what the story is with Elias Theodora.
Something.
Well, just because he was a, it kind of came out, it was like the last season of The Ultimate Fighter, I think I kind of even halfway remember. He came out of the show, he's this good-looking guy, he gets these modeling gigs and shit.
Yeah.
He's not like, you know, he's won in some fights, he's got a personality, and he's on the super opener on a Liverpool show on Fight Pass. I don't know. It feels like he's being punished for something. Like, this is like where they put you when you talk too much about starting a union.
Yeah, and you would think that he's pretty active on social media and stuff, too. I see his shit on Twitter all the time. And he did that ring card girl thing where he went to Invicta. I don't know about the story. He's not a bad fighter by any stretch. He's 7-2 in the UFC. Not like
yeah,
there's some garbage.
Something's weird there. I don't know. I'm going to guess he rebuffed Dana White's advances.
Ooh. That's a theory. I don't know.
There's got to have been some fighter that one time Dana tried to get him to suck his dick just to see if he could get it to happen.
Huh.
He calls in Koji Oishi or something.
Interesting choice. that might be fantasy of your own. Dana had said before the Liverpool card that he was planning on meeting Conor McGregor. Apparently that meeting did not take place. He said he and I haven't seen each other since New York, so we haven't seen each other. We haven't talked, nothing. We need to get together soon, when asked about the meeting. I don't know what to make of that, other than it probably means McGregor's not fighting anytime soon.
Or, honestly, I don't know. It's Conor, it's Dana. These two people are just inherently full of shit. So that means they could have already talked on the phone and have something figured out. Or I find that hard to believe that somehow Conor McGregor got arrested for throwing a fucking thing through a window a day before a big pay-per-view, and the head of the UFC has not been in contact with him since. That feels like a little, I don't know, like you'd be in more contact with an employee of yours if they dropped a glass at the restaurant that Dana has when one of his employees almost destroyed a pay-per-view. So, yeah. What is this shit? Like, you got to meet in person to talk? You're not Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un where, you know, you're having high-level diplomatic meetings. It's not like you have to coordinate shit weeks in advance, and Dana's people talk to Connor's people, and they set the parameters what they're going to talk about, and it's only going to be, we're only going to discuss fights that we have the potential between 2 million and 2.5 million buys. Nothing higher, nothing lower. Everybody agrees. Like, no. You're going to say, hey, you got any boxing offers? No? All right. Here's the guy who I want you to fight. Here's how much money you're going to get. You know this deal. You want to dance, motherfucker? Let's do it, you Irish leprechaun turd.
Sound like Jeremy Stevens there.
Hey, what a fucking loser Stevens is. Yeah, I put people to sleep. Yeah, ha ha. Yeah, no, that's because you suck, man. Now you'll know my name. You'll know who I am. Yeah, man, you suck. And then just shut down. God, that was beautiful.
You did have the comeback with the mum, the picture with Connor's mum, though.
That is true. Getting a picture with Conor from Mom was pretty fucking baller. Like, that was a pretty great social media subtweeting threat. And that's what that was. That was a threat. A grown man threatened another grown man via the internet that he was going to fuck his mother.
Or that he already had. That was the implication, yeah. I thought.
Either way, his penis and Conor's mom would be involved in some sort of dalliance.
I'm looking on Connor's Instagram right now, and apparently he's on a yacht somewhere off the coast of Ireland. He is on a jet ski and taking selfies, and he's diving off a yacht. So it doesn't look like he's really too concerned about meeting with Dana or his next fight at all.
If I had a yacht, I don't think I can think of any place on Earth that I would less want to have a yacht than off the coast of Ireland. I mean, what the hell?
On Instagram, in the caption he wrote, there's no sea like the Irish Sea. And it shows him
diving. My gosh. It's a boat, you asshole. You can just drive it down to Italy. You're right there.
He works that Irish gimmick, man. That's one thing he's been consistent with. Like, I'll never leave Ireland, this or that. I love Ireland. He's kind of stayed true to that, out of all the shit he says and doesn't do. Like, he could be living anywhere in the world or wherever he wants.
You know, it's funny. Ireland only has, like, 6 million people in it. So being, like, a big star in Ireland, that's not that big of a deal. Like, Chicago, there's more people live in Chicago than there is in Ireland. Like, really, how tough is it to be that famous in Ireland? Like, I could get famous in Chicago. Like, I've been on I was almost on television in Chicago. Like, it happens.
4.7 million people in Ireland.
God, it's even less than I thought.
Yeah.
I think the Pope spoke to more people. I think WrestleMania 3 had more people.
Connor and Floyd did that many buys.
It's true. Yeah, basically.
But did it, the record's 4-6. I think it did like 4-3. It was real close to 4-6.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? You got to figure that they did enough buys that every single person in Ireland could have bought it, because the other 300,000 or whatever were there in Vegas.
Yeah.
These people have nothing. They have nothing.
They're just a bunch of losers. They're a bunch of losers. I don't have a lot of respect for the Irish, it seems.
Speaking of people who I'm losing respect for, Nick Diaz was arrested for domestic battery. Obviously, Diaz has not fought in a while. He popped for weed for like the third time, and the Nevada State Athletic Commission wanted to ban him from fighting for life, then 5 years. Then he got it rescinded, but he still had a fine to pay. He still hasn't paid the fine, as far as I know, so he's not really allowed to fight yet and doesn't seem very interested in fighting. He's got a couple big paydays from GSP and Anderson Silva fights, so he's always said he doesn't like fighting anyway, but he might have been fighting with his longtime girlfriend. She apparently had choke marks on his neck, on her neck, and has been charged with strangulation and domestic battery in the first degree. There's a mugshot of him out. There's been rumors of some cocaine use with him. Again, these are alleged accusations. So, not a good look for Nick Diaz.
Yeah, the first thing I thought when I saw this story, the very first word that popped in my head was cocaine. Like, this just has, like, that cocaine feel. Like, I know the Diaz brothers have done dumb shit, but usually, like, their riots are in the cage or with other fighters. But I heard, like, domestic abuse thing. Like, I actually didn't assume hitting a woman at all, because something about Nick with a woman doesn't... It feels weird. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's something he would do. But, so I thought, like, he just got in a fight at a club with somebody. And so then I immediately thought, well, what's Nick doing at a club? He's on coke. Because like, all of his decisions are drug-influenced in some way. And this just felt like a coke thing. I didn't know that it was this girl. All of a sudden, I just kind of all week been thinking, there is old Nick. What a moron. Just can't catch a break, can he? But now that I realize he's maybe beating up his girl, I kind of hope he goes to hell and never comes back to the UFC. And if he does, I really hope he gets Khabib, and Khabib just beats the fuck out of him. And I hope Khabib talks to him the whole time and says, this is for your woman. This is for your woman. Although, I have a pretty good feeling that Khabib has hit his woman every once in a while. But I feel like he doesn't do it maliciously. Like, I bet Khabib hits his woman and truly doesn't want to do it, but thinks it's like his duty as a man to discipline, like, man discipline woman. And it breaks his heart because he loves her, but damn it, she didn't do it right. And you have to hit her to teach her a lesson. And he does it. He really does it out of love. He just doesn't know any better.
Yeah, he's trying to make her a better person.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. This is a weird one because there's been other guys who have gotten in trouble for similar things, whether it's Rumble Johnson or just been other guys. I'm drawing a blank. I can picture some of these guys. But UFC has brought them back, and it kind of blows over. Maybe this thing gets, thrown out, or the story's wrong, whatever. They would still bring Diaz back, especially in 2018, the way the business is now. If this gets cleared up, he'd be back to fight in no time if he wants to fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is already sounds like it's just water under the bridge, unfortunately.
How do you sign Greg Hardy? I'm not saying they should.
No.
If I was running a company, I wouldn't go out of my way to find guys who beat up women to hire. But when you've kind of already set the precedent and said, you know what, you don't care about this. Dana White in the past has said, you can't come back from putting your hands on a woman. He had said that, but apparently that's gone by the wayside now. And, like, if you've got Greg Hardy, what the hell? You might as well bring back Mayhem Miller, too.
Well, why don't they just dig up, face? Damn it, I was just going to say it. I was pausing for effect. Damn it. I've gone on Wikipedia to look up his name and everything, because I couldn't remember it.
Can we get War Machine out of prison, maybe?
Oh, my gosh. That one. Ugh. Yeah, MMA fighters, man, when they go after their women, they don't fuck around. You know, like this bullshit, like, what's his face from the who threw his girl on the bed of guns? That was pretty cool. But for the most part, the NFL guys are just doing standard shit. Like, when that monster beat that woman in the elevator, it's
not Ray Lewis. For the Ravens, something. The running back.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing how quick you forget. That was such a huge story. Holy shit.
And that was like, that was, you know, in some weird way, that was almost kind of the beginning of the Me Too movement. As far as, like, having, like, this public trial, if you will, of, like, a man mistreating a woman, and it seemed to continue on, and, but, no, again, when he hit her, like, it was horrific, but it was kind of like, if you... There you go, Ray Rice. Like, if you had to imagine what a man beating a woman looks like, that's kind of what you would imagine. Where, like, in MMA, like, Josh Crispy trained his dogs to attack her. Like, that's inventive and cruel. Like, that's not just, like, your normal, like, it's like, what War Machine did was really above and beyond. Like, fight mixed martial artists, man, say what you will about the evil they're doing, they're creative with it.
Well,
but yeah,
to me,
they'll 100% bring it back because this stuff matters nothing. The only thing that matters is does it get a lot of really bad attention and press? And it already hasn't. The story's already gone. Yeah. Nobody's going to care about Nick Diaz. It's Nick. Nobody he's so liked anyways. And the story, you know, it's going to sound like it's choking, but. I guarantee you, if it's Nick Diaz's longtime girlfriend, she's nuts. Now, I'm not saying that she deserves it or anything like that, but there's going to be a lot of people that I'm sure know her, and they're like, look, she talks a lot of shit sometimes. Like, I'm not saying she deserved it. And there's just going to be enough of that, and there's going to be enough women being like, no, I know her. I know her type. And then we're all just going to let it go, because we want to watch the idiot child smoke weed on television in front of us.
To me... The difference, one of the big differences with these athletes, too, they're all jacked up and huge and strong, and especially with MMA fighters, they're trained to beat the shit out of other grown men who are trained to beat the shit out of other grown men. Like, it's just so much, like, more... I'm not saying it's more wrong. It's wrong if you're hitting anybody anytime, anywhere, but it's like there's a big difference between Nick Diaz attacking a woman and your average, out-of-shape, 35-year-old... me or you hitting a woman. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I mean...
There's like assault with a deadly weapon, like... You know what I mean? Like, he's a deadly weapon. Nick Diaz can beat the shit out of anybody in the world. I can't necessarily.
Oh, well, it's funny because... Well, all that is obviously true. For the most part, like, as somebody that's trained enough and has been really angry at times and things like that, the kind of, like... Part of doing martial arts is that you really don't lose control. Because when you want to engage physically, like, your brain just instinctively goes to, you know, real techniques. And, like, when you're mad at somebody, like, you just want to hit them, you know, like how you picture Mike Tyson hitting somebody. But if your brain's just saying, like, grab an underhook, like, what are you going to do, like, hug your girl? Like, it's just kind of, you know, choking somebody. It's not like you get that visceral, animalistic thrill. Like, the act of wrestling and submissions is an act of intellect. Like, you have to think about what you're doing. You can't accidentally do it. You've never seen, like, a monkey accidentally do a go-go plata, but they've accidentally done right hooks. And so I'm just saying that if Nick's going to go out there and beat her up, he's probably not going to be using his most deadly and effective techniques. Because it's kind of weird to, like, you know, you put somebody to sleep with a triangle choke when you're really angry at them. It's just like, yeah, okay, good job there, Nick. Yeah.
Michael Bisping has retired, so I guess we're not going to get that Nick Diaz-Michael Bisping fight ever. Bisping, obviously, former middleweight champion of the world, only, you're talking 6 months ago before he lost to GSP. He's been in the UFC forever. Probably the biggest star out of Europe, I think, in the history of MMA.
Yeah, him, maybe. Well, Krokop and some of those guys, depending on how, you know, if you count Japan versus America, it's difficult.
Right.
And, I mean, realistically, if you take the ethnocentric Aryan nation standpoint, where all white men in America are of the European descent, we're really all just Europeans. So George St. Pierre is probably it. Wait a second. Actually, I thought of somebody else who's a bigger star that came from Europe.
Who?
Conor McGregor.
Oh, shit. You're right. Yeah. Forgot about
Oops.
Him.
We got to remember that guy. Yeah,
he's easy to forget. Besides the point, he's done. And to me, the thing with Bisping's career is that he was always really, really good, but he could never, like, get that one win to get the title shot. And he took that short-notice title fight with Luke Rockhold. Everybody thought he was going to get killed. He was on a movie set. He wasn't training at all. Nobody thought he'd even be able to make weight. And then he goes in there and he knocks out Rockhold in, the first round and wins the title in, like, this monumental upset that nobody saw coming. He wasn't even the first in line for that title shot. I think they wanted Jacare to get the first shot, and Jacare wouldn't be ready in time, so Bisping took it. He did it with, like, an eye that doesn't really work anymore, like, blind in one eye. Then he beat Dan Henderson in that fight where he avenged that knockout loss, probably the worst loss of his career. And then he had the GSP fight, big payday at the end of his career, even though he lost. So I think when people look back on Bisping's career, they'll say, you know what, he was pretty good. And prior to that Rockhold fight, it would be like, he could never win the big one. He never got there. He was good but not great. But I, as far as promos go and as a fighter, he's up there, man.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially the way he finished his career, it was ideal. You know, everybody was always rooting for him, and I think on some level, everybody looked at him and thought, if he could only win that title somehow, then, you know, he'd be an all-time great, but he'll never do it because he's not really there. And then he goes out and he does it. And he arguably, and if he had beaten George St. Pierre, he would have capped off just an incredible run. As it is, and you could probably, if he's, I'm glad that he's retiring, as I say every time. I'm glad any time any fighter retires, it's the only sport where I, like, actively root for people not to do it. But, you know, it comes, it goes off on a weird loss, the two losses. But otherwise, he went out there in 1 year, you know, he beats Anderson Silva and Luke Rockhold and Dan Henderson. He does everything. He does everything you could ever do in a career, especially for somebody like him. He beat his greatest rival, he won the world title, and he beat the greatest of all time. That's an amazing streak. So if you're, and he's got a lot of money, too. That's the most important thing of all. He's got money, he lives in California, he got the fuck out of England. Yeah, good for you, Michael Bisping.
I mean, one of the other things with his career, when you look back on it, too, a lot of his losses, he bitched about it all the time, but were to guys who were on, like, either TRT or pop for steroids or had something going on. Like, he lost to Vitor, he lost to Chael, he lost to Wanderlei Silva, he lost to Dan Henderson. You know, and those are guys are all had some shady history with steroids and PEDs. So you got to wonder what even could have been. Because he always claimed to be clean. His body never really changed. He was never like a jacked up, super powerful guy. Like, if you thought a fighter in the UFC was high level and clean, this thing's one of the few you might check that box off for.
Yeah, he's one of the few guys that I would, like, if you know, if you made me put money down, I would lean towards him. And I don't think it really would have made a big difference, probably in his career overall. I mean, TRT or no, he would still been an underdog in a lot of those fights. But if you're Bisping, you can easily look at it and go, hey, once we got this drug testing in, look what happens. All of a sudden, I win the title. I beat Henderson. I beat Anderson Silva. Yeah, you're damn right. I would have been doing this 10 years earlier. I don't think he would have, but I can understand why he thinks it could have been the case.
Also, real good promos. He was great at building a fight. There was always some sort of, I want to say, hatred between him and his opponent, but even, like, just your random, you know, fight against Jorge Rivera, he got people into a fight like that by cutting promos and Rivera doing interviews and making videos. Then after the fight, Bisping spits at Rivera's corner, and I know a lot of people, like, look down on that, but whatever. It got a lot of press, and it made Bisping a heel, and it made a lot of his feuds and fights seem more real and seem like he had legit heat with these guys he was fighting.
Yeah, and I always got the impression that he's a guy that, like, he kind of got what the sport was, even more like the pro wrestling fans that kind of grew up with it, because he really, like, he knew to play up things, but it was never fake, per se. Like, he'd find a way to get himself into it. He never took it personally, but it was almost kind of like, it's a very English character, if you will, like, to kind of like, hey, I go out there, I drink, we talk shit, we fight, and then we make up afterwards. Like, it's not just like, you know, fake pro wrestler. It's, oh, this is what I imagine some punk from Manchester does on a Friday night in a pub. And for him, he was the kind of guy that, like a Matt Hughes type, where he expected you to give it back to him. Like, if he needled you, if he insulted you, he expect you to insult him back. And if you didn't, he would almost kind of be hurt that you didn't. That's all I'm saying, is that George St. Pierre broke his heart.
Well, I mean, it's even more impressive after that GSP fight. He took that Gastelum fight 3 weeks later. And granted, he got knocked out. He got his ass kicked in 2 minutes. But even so, like, coming off a loss to GSP, where it was his biggest payday of his entire life by far, to take on a guy like Kelvin Gastelum in Shanghai, China, of all places, on 3 weeks' notice, just kind of showed that he had some balls on him at a time where no other fighter of his stature or level coming off a loss like that would have gone to China and fought like that.
Oh, no. I mean, that's just to come off the, you know, losing your world title in Madison Square Garden and all this stuff, and then be like, yeah, I'll go to the hinterlands of China and fight. Well, why not?
So, yeah, my review of Michael Bisping's career is a thumbs up. I'm a fan. But I'm also glad to see him get out when he's still got, you know, some of his brain left, even though he lost an eye. At least he's got most of his brain left. He seems still fairly with it.
But it's interesting is that he's one of the, you know, those last dying breed of that original generation of new UFC stars. You know, he's UFC, he's Ultimate Fighter Season 3. Yeah. And, you know, carried him through Spike. Was one of their first attempts to really make an international star. Yeah. And I know that he bored you to the point where you yawn while we talk about him, but the rest of us respect the man and his career.
Can you tell me what happened 8 years ago this week? 2010.
Probably not at all. No, I'll be a total blank on this.
I'll give you some hints. MGM Grand Arena, Las Vegas, Nevada. Attendance was 14,996 with a total gate of $3.8 million. Buy rate, 1,050,000.
1,050,000, 2010, and it's May. A million buys. Is this some, this is one of those weird fucking shows where, like, in hindsight, you're like, wow, this company was hot. What the fuck? I mean, UFC with Lesnar and Carwin is in July. Then there has the one before that was the one, I think it was like Calgary or whatever, was Dos Santos and Shane Carwin. And fuck me, what was before? I want to see, it feels like some with Rashad in it, but that's disappointing. But, let's see, we're 2 years before Ronda. We are before Chael and Anderson. No, welterweight shit. No, this MGM. That's green. That's a green arena. Green posters, green lights and everything. Gold thing. Later to be involved in the biggest cover up of a mass shooting in the history of the United States of America. I will say, I'm gonna say Rashad Evans loses to Lyoto Machida.
Ooh, Rashad Evans defeated Quinton Rampage Jackson by unanimous decision.
Son of a bit, like, well, I was right. It was one of those weird fights where you're just like, that is a million pies?
Yeah, crazy, right? It was still, it was back when Tough still mattered a little bit. They built
that was a great build.
Really well on top. And remember there was some show where I think Rampage won a fight and then Quinton... No, Rampage won the fight and then maybe Evans got in the cage and started talking shit. Joe Rogan's just standing there with the mic laughing at both of them going back and forth. Like, it was when they used to, like... I think that shit helps, bringing the guy into the cage. I know they don't really do it anymore. But just that face-off and them talking shit, you can replay it over and over. Then they built that show with... Rampage breaking the door and
yes,
that guy Titties. Remember that fat guy Titties?
Rampage
made fun of him the whole season. But yeah, I mean, crazy that that did a million buys, and they're doing shows now with like Amanda Nunes that's doing 100,000. It's just interesting that the drop off, and there was no title fight on that card. There was no undercard whatsoever. The co-main was Michael Bisping versus Dan Miller. Like, this card was nothing. Nothing on this show. The rest of the main card had Mike Russo defeating Todd Duffy. Antonio Ruggiero Nogueira defeating Jason Brills. And John Hathaway beating Diego Sanchez.
I remember there was a little Nog's UFC debut, I think. And Brills almost caught him like in a fucking Kimura or something, and just dove on that thing and just wouldn't let go. The good old days when I could remember things.
Yeah, so that show did a million buys. That's how hot the company was and how big that feud got over. It's like grudge matches are where the money's at. Like, that's always the case. It doesn't matter about titles. It doesn't matter about who the most skilled fighters are. If you can build up a grudge and people think it's real, they'll buy it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the titles and all that are good because they create an excuse, but that's all it is. All we are looking for is an excuse to watch two men fight. And if you tell us that they hate each other, we go, all right. If you tell us it's to see who's the best, okay. Or if you tell us it's for, like, a ton of stupid money, we go, all right, I get it. That all makes sense. But it's, like, $2,000 to fight in, like, you know, a meth-addled Iowa barn. That's when people are just kind of like, oh, this is really dumb.
Or even, like, the Liverpool show. Like, by the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like you watched that whole card. I didn't watch that whole card.
No.
It's like, who, if we're not... Who the fuck is?
It's in the middle of a Sunday. The middle of a Sunday afternoon. I actually stopped it, and I went to a movie rather than watch the car because I'm like, I'll come back and watch the shit that I want to watch and fast forward through. And I was right because then I could fast forward through to a grown ass man playing patty cakes for 25 minutes.
Yeah, there's just something to say that. Like, even us, we're getting burnt out. And it's just, I don't know what the solution is. They've got these TV deals.
There's no solution. There's no problem. It's not a problem. None of this is a problem at all. Because, okay, big deal. Like, they're making money, and, oh, no, I didn't get super excited at Stephen Thompson, Darren Till. I still watched it.
Right.
You know? At the end of the day, oh, yeah, maybe I wasn't excited. I'll still get excited for the important things. And this gives me something to do, especially on my Saturday nights, that really gives me a purpose in life. Like, when I'm watching this, and I can tweet about it or write something up, it makes me feel like, oh, yeah, that's why I'm at home on a Saturday night. I'm working. I'm building something for the future. Thank you, UFC. You've kept me alive.
Wow. That is quite the gift. What else? I guess that was it. Yeah. Melvin Gillard fought on the prelims. Yeah.
Did he get out of jail?
I don't know. No, I'm talking about on UFC 114.
I just realized that as you said. I'm like, oh, he's talking about back then. I'm like, I missed him fighting on the prelims in, like, Bellator.
I'm not sure of Melvin Gillard's current.
Well, he had that deal where he was trying to get to the weigh-ins for that one fight or something.
Yeah, the bare knuckle shit. Yeah. This weekend we have a UFC fight night. It's on June 1st. I think it's a Friday, right?
It is. I just saw it on accident. I'm like, ooh, Friday night. Interesting.
That is interesting. Usually I'm off Friday night, except this one. Anyway, so we've got fight night. This is number... What number is this?
Yeah, you. In the corner. No, get him out of the... Get him out of it. I don't care. If you got plenty of fucking lube there. You can get him up. Yeah, just get him up. And yeah, I know it's all sweaty. No, I didn't tell you to do it. You don't have to grab him. No, you grab the thing that is attached to him. No, come on. Just give him it. Just give him the fucking thing. Just do it. All right? Can you just do that? The thing. The fucking thing right there. That one right there. Right in your hand. The fucking chalk. There's chalk in your hand. Give him the chalk. Write the number on the board now, Gimp. Do it. I said fucking write it. Don't you fucking eyeball. I can see your fucking eyeballs. That's why you can see me, the motherfucker. Just because I can't hear you. It doesn't mean I don't know what you're saying. I could hear this fucking right. 131. It's UFC Fight Night 131.
Thank you, guys. Jeez. A lot of work. It's at the Adirondack Bank Center, famous arena in Utica, New York. In the main event, we've got Jimmy Rivera versus Marlon Moraes.
Yeah. You sound thrilled about that.
Good fight. Good fight. I know no one knows them or is going to rush out to watch it. Marlon, there's a former WSOF champ. Good friends with Ali Abdelaziz, I presume. And Jimmy Rivera beat up Uriah Faber.
Everybody.
Yeah.
No, it's a good fight. It's kind of like what we just had where you look at it at the card, like, hey, we get to see, guys who aren't shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's two top five bantamweights, I would say. They're in the mix for a title shot after, Cody Garbrandt and Dillashaw fight again, and who knows what's going on with Dominic Cruz. So, I mean, the winner of this, depending on what Cruz does, could be a line for a title shot. I know this fight was, almost going to happen a couple times, but, there was issues with one of the guys making weight. I think Marlon was going to
step Moraes.
In. Yeah, he was going to step in for Dominic Cruz, but couldn't make weight, and they were going to move it up, and Rivera was okay with it, but I don't know. So they're finally
Rivera's like, I'll do it at Rivera's like, 135, okay, 140, 145, 150. You just pick a weight, and I'll do it. I don't care. He was so desperate to fight, right. And then he got married, and he didn't want to, fight, the day after his honeymoon. And Moraes like, now you don't want to fight. You're a coward. And so the UFC took notice of this brewing feud, and they decided to reward the men as they could headline a show in Utica, which has a population of 62,000.
Did you just look that up? Is that legit?
Yeah, I just looked it up, yeah.
Huh. Way less people than Ireland.
Not that many fewer, but yeah, a little bit less. But still, I mean, 62,000? What the fuck is going on? What is it really close to Albany or something? Why would you put a show in Utica?
I think UFC, when they went to New York, promised them a show in Utica.
Is that the capital?
No, Albany.
So where the fuck are they going to Utica?
You know the capital of New York?
But why would they promise a show for Utica?
I don't know. They said they were going to do shows upstate, too, in addition to... NYC. Utica's not that far north. It's like in the middle of the state.
Yeah, but it's still Utica. It has 62,000 people in it. Big UFC going to Peoria. Or UFC Rockford. Actually, Rockford's got way more than 62,000.
I don't even
it's
know
like
where
UFC
Rockford
Boise. Is. Rockford's outside of Chicago a bit.
Well, I know... I think John Jones is from Utica originally, isn't he?
Yeah, they got some wrestling up there, but it's still Utica.
Yeah, it's smack dab in the middle of New York State. Huh.
It's like going to Boise or anywhere in Ohio.
I always
thought it was really weird when they run shows in Columbus, Ohio. I'm like, Columbus? Like, I always see Columbus on, they have, soccer teams and shit. And I'm always amazed that, it's a real city. Because it's Columbus. It feels like, who the fuck lives in Columbus, Ohio? Why would you live in Columbus?
Although I like the city, it's a really nice place, but still, it's fucking weird.
160,000 people.
Yeah, that's more than 10 times as many people as fucking Utica.
Well, I wasn't saying it was bad, it was more than I thought.
I mean, 60,000 people. Almost every single NFL game averages more fans in attendance.
Cleveland's only got 385,000.
Really?
And Cincinnati's 298. Columbus is more than double the size of both of them.
Jeez, I would have thought that those would have been much bigger.
Which is, just based on the sports scene.
Exactly what it is. It all comes down to sports teams. Like, well, you have multiple teams, and I'm aware of who those teams are. Everybody knows, like, you know, the Cleveland Browns and Cleveland Indians. Nobody knows the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Right, and why would sports teams go to small markets when there's plus people to buy tickets and merch and stuff? Obviously, you want to be in the biggest cities possible.
They weren't really small at one time. They've just died, and so have the teams with them. And that's why Trump is president.
In the semi-main event, Gregor Gillespie versus Vince Pichel.
Yeah. I mean, they're not all going to be winners these days, are they?
Gregor Gillespie's a bit of a prospect. I mean, he's 11-0.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. I take back all my snark. I take it back.
He's a
Gregor
good
Gillespie is
or something, right?
He's a super stud. That's right. He's like an all-American or national champion wrestler who showed real natural power in his hands and athleticism and the way he moved on the ground. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I think he might have had a drug problem at one time. I only say that because he's like in his 30s or something.
Yeah, he's 31.
Just now getting
UFC.
Talked
about this. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, so I assume there's some sort of drug thing that kept him inactive for a couple of years.
Yeah, he's 4-0 in the UFC now, and nobody even knows who he is. This is kind of the classic story here we've been talking about for years now. Back in the day, if you were 4-0 in the UFC, you'd have a ton of hype behind you, but now it's not meaningless, but it's definitely not the deal it was before. Pichel here is 35. He's won 4 straight and is 11-1 in his career. So he's not bad either. His only loss has been to Rustam Khabilov, who's beat a lot of guys. So I guess a decent co-main event, even though you haven't even heard of the guys. Gillespie's probably the guy to watch most closely in that fight. Then a heavyweight fight, we've got Walt Harris versus Daniel Spitz.
That's heavyweight. Harris is, I don't know, Daniel Spitz. I just looked him up. I think his nickname is Meathead. That's all you need to know. Oh, never mind. He attended Mead High. Oops. That's the same as Meathead.
He is from Spokane, Washington. His nickname is Daddy Longlegs. He is 67 inches tall.
He's nothing to worry right home.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the rest of this card, and I love it. They're giving us one of those classic fights. One of those, is this fight a rematch of something that happened in 2007?
I fought Cabbage Carrera in 2016. I can't believe he's still fighting.
He's still alive.
I'm shocked by that. That is disturbing. Moving along. Jake Ellenberger versus Ben Saunders, two old guys who aren't that good anymore.
Yeah, and again, like I said, the rematch of something that probably happened in 2007, for all we know. I can't believe that they're both fighting. I can't believe they're both fighting the UFC. And that, like, really, why are they fighting each other? I understand if the UFC says, hey, you know, these guys are good, or, you know, we want to see if they can the next generation beat them or whatever. But if they're going to have them fight, they should be fighting younger guys to see where they really stack up. They should be fighting each other. This is just watching old people hit each other. There's no reason for that. I mean, it's amusing if they're really old, but they're not old enough for it to be amusing anymore.
the juggernaut, Jake Ellenberger, is 4-8 in his last 12.
There's a lot of guys that we talk about these days where it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, no, he's 3-7 his last 10. It's like, what the fuck? How is he 3-7? He's still in the UFC. That's horrible.
Yeah, it's like you get a win here or there. They're scattered. But, yeah, the last, even worse than that, he's 2-6 in his last 8. No, 2-7 in his last 8. No, 2-7 in his last 9. That makes more sense. He lost to Rory McDonald, Robbie Lawler, Kelvin Gastelum, beat Koscheck, lost to Thompson, lost to Safadine, beat Matt Brown, and then lost to Masvidal and lost to Mike Perry.
But, you know, he's willing to step up on short notice, and he gives a good fight, and who cares if he's going to... You know, I want to get moralistic a bit. Who cares if he dies one day, as long as we get to see him fight and all this. But it's not the UFC exploiting him. You know, this guy would be fighting in Ring of Combat or Iowa's Smoking Joe show or some, you know, Bare Knuckle Fights 3012 in Louisiana or somewhere. You know, that's just who these guys are. At least the UFC make sure they get good blood tests.
Julio Arce versus Daniel Tamer.
Yeah.
John Volante versus Sam Alvey opens the show on Fox Sports 1.
Woohoo! Sam Alvey! That's always good.
He likes to fight a lot and also enjoys smiling. He's moving up again in weight to light heavyweight. Apparently, when you fight every other week, it's hard to make 185 pounds, so you just fight at 205 all the time now, even though you're going to fight bigger, stronger guys who will probably beat the shit out of you.
I love when a dude just moves up in weight and just starts beating people's asses, and you can just tell that he's just doing it, and you know his life is improved because he's not training as hard as he once did. He's not watching his diet like he once did. That means that his day-to-day life is better. He's able to go up there and still whoop some ass, and you just tell he's like, I'm just loving it, man. Like, that's, he's like, this is what I've always wanted from the sport. I don't want it to be sucking wind and cutting weight and doing all this stuff. Like, I just want to eat, you know, eat some donuts, get my cardio in, go in there and kick some ass.
He has fought in the UFC 14 times since his debut in August of 2014.
Wow. So you want to be a fucking fighter.
Fucking crazy. But, yeah, he fights 4 times every year. Consistently.
I thought Cerrone was crazy. Now there's like a lot of guys doing it.
Yeah, Magny and Alvey, but I don't know. Some guys are built for it, I guess. On the prelims, we've got Sajara Eubanks versus Lauren Murphy, Nick Lentz versus David Tamer. Apparently, the Tamer brothers are tag teaming on this show.
That's not a bad fight.
Bilal Muhammad, don't forget the name, versus Rencontre. Sounds French.
Chance Rencontre? I don't know. I'll say this. Bilal Muhammad is a dude that... I'll say this a lot. For a guy whose nickname I first initially beratedly laughed at, probably in an offensive way when I first heard it, I will say every single time I see his name, I just think, Bilal, remember the name Muhammad. I'll give it to him. I remembered your goddamn nickname. All right, dude, you win. Praise be to you, Allah.
Desmond Green versus Gleison Tibau, who's still fighting. Holy shit. The last time he fought.
I bet he's coming off a drug suspension.
He last fought at UFC 220 in Boston, left by knockout to Islam Makhachev in 57 seconds. He's lost.
He's lost. Hey, another one of those dudes. He's on the downswing, and then you realize he's only like 31. You go, oh boy.
He's 34. I would have thought he was fucking 39, 40. Holy shit. I feel like Tebow's been around forever. Like,
he has. Like,
Hermes Franca and shit.
Yeah.
Hermes Franca? Why do I think that? Holy shit.
Probably
he fought Nick Diaz in 06.
The reason you thought of Hermes Franca is because you heard the phrase "looks really young," and then Hermes Franca's name came to mind.
He does have a checkered past with younger humans. Jessica Aguilar versus Jody Escobel, Johnny Eduardo versus Nathaniel Wood, and Jared Brooks versus Jose Torres on Fight Pass.
Hey, something to do on a Friday night.
Yeah. Huh. On the poster, it says it's got Rivera and Moraes face to face, and it says no excuses. Too bad no one knows what that refers to. Like, anyway. I get
Gal, and the picture they have there on Wikipedia is really low quality also. Nobody gives a shit about this fight. A tip of a hat to the Yale men out there that keeping up to date the Wikipedia entry for UFC Utica. Like, you're really making sure that we preserve knowledge for future generations.
It is important that this is all documented.
Think about that. We look at... Now, you don't have to apologize. I'm just saying horseshit. But, like, we go through all this archaeology, and we find, like, one or two little things, or we get, like, books that are, you know, 5,000 years old, and, like, they're real, you know, authentic books or whatever, and we just go, well, that must be what the world was like back then. This guy wrote it down. That's the only book we have. Why would he lie? We don't know what it was actually like. Meanwhile, every single day on Earth is being recorded in this time period in exquisite detail. They will have no doubt about what kind of losers existed in this age.
True. Very true. So in other news, right, we're going to move away from MMA. It was actually a bit of a slower news week with these lame-ass shows and...
Good.
Nothing major happening, but in the sporting world, I know you were a little sad in that Liverpool lost to Real Madrid. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Do you want to discuss that?
No. I already discussed it on another show also.
I saw, was it really like 2 hours?
No, 20 minutes.
Oh, maybe the time was weird. Let's say you talked about that for 2 hours.
Like, no, 20 minutes as I walked the dog.
Yeah, I saw some guy get like pulled to the ground and separated his shoulder.
Yeah,
that was the one thing I saw. That was everywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
The Celtics lost. Would you like to talk about that? The Cavs are back in the NBA Finals.
Wait, are we going to talk about the 76ers?
I wasn't planning on it. What do I need to know?
Oh. Apparently, this just came out today, in the past couple hours, and I've been trying to follow up and read it, and it's hilarious. The Philadelphia 76ers, who have just come off their best season in forever, all their young talents kind of gelling, their GM, Brian Colangelo, got exposed and somehow accidentally doxxed on Twitter, and it was revealed that there's multiple anonymous Twitter accounts that are connected and linked to him, that have been trashing the shit out of 76 players. Like, what? Some of his own guys. Like, yeah. The Philadelphia, his president of basketball operations has been secretly operating 5 Twitter accounts. Since then, we have scrutinized and archived those accounts in an attempt to verify the sources' claims that the longtime NBA executive has been using them as a platform to criticize NBA players, including his own, publicly debate the decisions of his own coaching staff, as well as criticize the former general manager, telegraph a 2017 trade in which his 76ers acquire a number overall pick, and disclose non-public medical information about Jamal Okafor, and gossip about Joel Embiid and Fultz to members of the national and Philadelphia media. Think about that. He discussed medical information and gossip about his own players via anonymous Twitter account. What the hell?
What would the benefit be?
I have no idea, other than I guess he feels a little cathartic. But I don't know why you'd have 5. Like, that seems like a lot of work.
That's just
trying to make your own shit.
I always wonder about shit like this because, like, it's easy. It's easy to say that, like, these people in charge of these big companies or organizations, whatever they might be, are fucking idiots. But it's like, you can't get in that kind of position and be a fucking moron. But then they do shit like this, and you're like, fucking idiot. Like, what, like...
Oh, I...
You're supposed to be running this multi... Like, this billion-dollar company, essentially. The Sixers, I'm sure, are worth $1 billion. And you're managing the team, deciding who they're going to draft and their contracts, who you're going to sign and let go, and all this shit. Really important shit to this huge company. And you're on Twitter with fake accounts talking shit about the players? Like, I just can't imagine.
It's alcohol. I would be willing to bet anything. Yeah. Remember, those types of guys have drinking and cocaine problems usually. And that's that mindset that, remember, these guys go 100 miles an hour. You're a GM of a basketball team. You're that type A personality. You don't sleep very much. And I bet he drinks a lot. And he's probably got all these accounts because you can't remember what the password was. He just wanted one account at first just to talk shit because it's kind of cathartic. And he wanted to be like fucking all day negotiating with Joel Embiid about when he's going to come back and play. And just get on in the internet and just be like, you know what, fuck you. And you know what, there's some value to that. There is some value to the cathartic nature of just anonymous accounts. I'm like the opposite in that I hate anonymous accounts because I am so insecure that I desperately need people to know it's me and for them to give me the attention. Like, I would be mortified at creating an anonymous Twitter account and then that account getting really popular and I couldn't tell people it was me. That's like a nightmare scenario in my life.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Like, people who come up with an anonymous account and go online and just give people shit and troll people. It's like, it's such a waste of time. For me, like, I don't give a shit what people do. If that's what you want to do with your time, do it. But to me, it's like, you're a fucking loser. Like, if you have something important to say and you really believe it, just put your name on it. Like, if that's what you truly believe and really care and are that passionate about, that you're going to go online for hours a day and argue with people. Like, if that's truly... whatever your issue is, if you're conservative or liberal or whatever it might be, like, if that's what you think, stand by it and don't put some bullshit handle on it, but whatever.
Maybe for me, it's probably been a good thing, and this will surprise people, but it does tame me a little, because I've always had my real name behind everything, and not that everything I've ever said is exactly appropriate, but... in general, like I've never really had, like, a Roseanne moment. Like, for all the dumb things I write, you rarely see something where you just go, whoa, 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 wait. You're just dropping the hard R on the N-word there, buddy, and that's not a joke. You're just, like, writing something racist. Like, the only time I worry about that is a little bit is some of the Armenian stuff. I do think it's pretty close where people are just going to be like, oh, I'm not really sure if he's joking anymore. Especially I get, like, describing various physical defects that are common within their bone structure. Yeah, I get a little carried away.
Speaking of the Sixers, did you see the videos of Embiid playing, like, on, like, local courts in Philadelphia against, like, guys in pickup games and just dunking all over them?
I love when athletes do that. And it seems to only really happen in basketball.
It's
like,
awesome.
You see everyone... And I've heard a lot of people say some variation of it, but I really think we need something in all major sports, like the Olympics, where... And the joke is, you have one regular person do the events along with everyone to give you just a scale of what's really going on. Because, like, you know these guys are really talented, but then you see them play in a pickup game of basketball, and you're like, oh, wait, now I understand. Like, if they had me run against Usain Bolt, all of a sudden you'd be like, oh, he's way faster than a normal person. Because you see right now, it's like, oh, he won by half a second. Whereas with me, he would literally beat me in a 100-meter dash. I bet he would beat me by 10 seconds.
Well, it's even funnier because I like to call people out on stupid shit they say, if you haven't noticed that. But when people are like, whoever it might be, Colin Kaepernick is a shitty quarterback. I'm like, no, he's one of the top 50 best quarterbacks in the world, and a job that every football player, millions of people, would die to have and train their whole life for and can't even make it to the NFL. It's like any quarterback in the NFL is in the top 0.00001% of athletes in the world. And it makes me laugh because people are like, I could have hit that pitch. It was right down the middle. It's like, no, you could not hit that 92-mile-per-hour fastball right down the middle. There's no way you would have even seen it.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just, and I guess it's part of human nature that people grossly overestimate their own abilities. And I think there's something, you know, I think it's what makes us the daredevil race of animals that we are, I guess.
Yeah, it's got CM Punk written all over it.
God, that's gonna be glorious.
What do you make of the Golden State Warriors versus the Cleveland Cavaliers number 4? Both what got to the finals through 7 games. They each had to come back to get there. Obviously, the East is a weaker division. LeBron has like no help this year. I mean, I guess Kevin Love will be back from his concussion, which really didn't look that bad at all. But do you give the Cavs any chance? Is this like the biggest mismatch in finals history? Or what do you make of this series?
I think that maybe the Cavs win 1 or 2 games at most. But otherwise, I mean, LeBron James is doing incredible things with that team. He has just dragged those losers across the line for years on end now. He gets into these finals, and if it was any like normal team, a very good team, he could maybe just through sheer force of will make it happen. But holy shit, he's going up against 5 superstars, and they just keep coming at him in waves. It's just like, you know, he's getting in there, he's just running the gauntlet, and it's just one after another, and they can all rest, and he can't. And I mean, I give LeBron a lot of credit. This dude is outstanding. Like, he has developed he's developing that Michael Jordan type of killer instinct where just like, oh shit, like LeBron can actually elevate his game now. Like, this is crazy. But the goddamn Warriors are a different breed, man. They're scary beasts.
Yeah, it seems not fair.
It does, except for with LeBron. I thought about this. I realized he was like the first guy to, and maybe not, but he kind of kick-started this super team thing. Like, maybe the Celtics did. Yeah, like, the Celtics kind of did, maybe, where you're just like, everybody looked and went, wait a second, you can't have, like, you can't just bring players to a team. You have to develop them and all this jazz. And the Celtics were just like, now we're just going to trade for them. And then we're going to get their first-round picks while we're at it. And we're just going to keep doing this for years on end. And we don't know why, but it's just going to keep working. And then they go down to Miami, and it was like, LeBron literally just said, no, I'm creating a team here. And everybody knew what he was doing. And then it worked. Right. And then Kevin Durant just went up to it. He's like, oh, yeah. Well, you want to see how this works? I'm gonna just slide my way into the DMs of the Golden State Warriors and make that shit happen.
Do you think LeBron will go to Houston next year? That's the rumor.
I have no idea.
That'd be good. That would be good.
That'd be weird. I mean, the only downside to that is, I don't really understand everything as far as like technically. It feels like my limited knowledge tells me that Harden, Chris Paul, and LeBron are all guys that want the basketball in their hand. But I also say that having watched like a quarter probably of a Houston Rockets game all year.
Right.
It seems odd to me that you would, if you're LeBron, that you would do that, where you know, put yourself in that position. But again, he did. I guess he did it before with the Heat when he went. It was kind of second fiddle to Dwayne Wade's team. But if you got to go and win, you win. I guess it's weird, but it's interesting. I'll say this for basketball:
they got cool storylines where, like, I will watch the NBA Finals. I watch the conference finals, and I look forward to it. Like, I'm enjoying every game. Like, this is good. I get why people like basketball now. They're not all just virtue signaling. This is entertaining.
Yeah, my kids were even into it with the Celtics. They rewatched the last couple of games with the Cavs. They were calling him James LeBron. They thought his first name was James. They were very confused calling him James LeBron. But
that's a reasonable mistake to make.
The Celtics didn't even have their two best players. Like, they should win the East next year if they have Kyrie and Gordon Hayward back. But we'll see if what kind of health they have next year. Because, I mean, they've drafted really well. They've got Tatum and Jaylen Brown and a couple of younger, like, 20, 21-year-old guys, plus two All-Stars coming back. So it should be much better next year. And I'm not saying they're going to beat the team that comes out of the West, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were competitive if all their guys stayed healthy.
Yeah, Cleveland to me would have to be the odds-on favorite, and by a significant margin to win the East. And that's even assuming LeBron stays. If LeBron leaves, unless he goes to, the Knicks or somebody and builds a super team over again, I don't know if he can do that. I mean, the Celtics they should just walk into the finals. Now, whether they do anything there, I don't think they probably will, just because basketball seems to be one of these sports that actually does require guys to, kind of hit the wall and step it up, and, iron sharpens iron. Like, Jordan had that with the Pistons, and
yeah,
it seems like in other sports it doesn't seem to work that way. But in basketball, does seem to be where you need to be tested, and I don't know if they'll get tested enough, and they don't have a LeBron type who just says, fuck you, I'm doing this. But again, LeBron really needs to leave. He has given way more than anybody else would have ever given to Cleveland, Ohio. We just talked about Cleveland. 300,000 people, and they're bitching and moaning. They should have been on their knees saying, thank you for the first time you got us to the championship, let alone coming back and winning one. Wow, you've made us winners. You made people forget that we are actually a really, really depressing city.
And that is your preview of the NBA Finals, everybody. So we had Liverpool losing, the Celtics losing. Now Roseanne has also lost. Her sitcom has been canceled by ABC after she went on Twitter and essentially called a former Obama staffer or aide or whatever, Valerie Jarrett. She said that she's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby. If they combined, that would be Valerie Jarrett. That didn't go over well, and she has now lost her network TV deal.
The whole thing is just kind of, it's entertaining. Really, like, more than anything, it's been entertaining to me. I don't really get outraged when, it's like the NFL with the kneeling and all this stuff. It's essentially like a billionaire told a multimillionaire to stop doing something. At the end of the day, they're all on the same private jets on the same private beaches. Like, okay, yeah. Like, I enjoyed the show. It was funny when it came back. If I never see another episode of Roseanne, I'm not going to cry. Yeah. If anything, from, like, an artistic standpoint, this is the best thing that could happen. Because I don't think the show is going to get better. They've had their 11 seasons now. And whatever ideas she had in her head, sitting there going, yeah, I really want to, like, tell this story or this story. Like, they did that. They got their, she probably said what she needed to say. I don't think it would have been, that much more to happen. It's stupid. It's a real dangerous era we live in where each side is just trying to collect scalps, because that's all this was. This is just collecting a scalp, and I understand the fun of it, but, first of all, it's Roseanne. Nobody really cares. Like, if she wasn't a big Trump supporter, nobody would care about this. But if she wasn't a big Trump supporter, she wouldn't have had a TV show either. That's kind of what made her relevant.
I don't think she actually meant to be racist with a joke. I don't think Roseanne really is that type of comedian. I think her reaction to it has been one of like genuine, like, no, I didn't mean that. Like, you look at some of these pictures. Valerie Jarrett does look like the one Planet of the Apes ape. Like, when I saw the side by side, I went, oh shit, I totally, that's a pretty good reference. She wouldn't say any ape, right? Just like this specific one. And, you know, if you'd asked me if Valerie Jarrett's black, I would have said, I don't think so. And I know who she is. Like, I really think Roseanne knows that shit. But more than that, I don't think anybody's really offended. Like, I don't think anybody really cared. I think everybody just does it for sport. They're trying to go after Bill Maher for something now or whatever. And
yeah.
It's just, if people were really upset, like when people really do, like, really cross the line, I'm like, I get it. Like, I don't always agree with it. I think sometimes you should just be like, you know, just let words be words. But I don't think anybody really cared. This is basically just a bunch of one group of white people telling another group of white people that this one other white lady did something that made black people mad. And the black people are like, yeah, I guess so. Okay. It's Roseanne. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because obviously there's, you know, the racial implications that, you know, you're comparing whatever African Americans to monkeys. Like, that's a classic derogatory racist insult, but it's been around forever, and that's how it was taken, that's how it looked, and now she's gone or whatever. It's just funny because there's obviously the two arguments. One, that she can say whatever she wants. There's freedom of speech, which she's entitled to. She can say whatever she wants. But there can be repercussions for the shit you say, and whether those repercussions are fair or not are open to debate. But when you're employed by somebody and they can terminate you at any time for whatever reason they see fit, that's the gamble you pay when you work for somebody else.
Oh, yeah. You know, ABC is obviously totally within their rights to do this, and is she to say what she says? I mean, legally. I think that conservatives justifiably will look at things like this and be like, because again, it's not like Roseanne was ever a Republican her whole life or anything like that, but now that she's associated with the Republicans, like, we see stuff that's 1,000 times worse than this said by Keith Olbermann every day, and he just got a promotion at ESPN. Like, there is a real weird double standard here, and you know, Tim Allen's show was taken off the air, and they had, like, the highest ratings on ABC's comedy. And people are, like, going, what's going on? Like, some of this stuff is really weird. And, like, because, like, the way they fired, they came down on Roseanne. I mean, they didn't even wait for a backlash. Like, they didn't, you know, usually they, a show like that, the number one hit they had, it's just weird. But
I wonder if they're
looking for a reason to get rid of it.
Well, there's a couple things with that. I wonder if she comes back on another network. Like, are advertisers going to be too wary, like, that network? Because the bottom line is and always will be money. Like, what's going to make money? What's going to get eyeballs on TV? We talk about it with MMA all the time. Conor McGregor, they want him back, whether he's throwing dollies through windows or all coked up at Bellator. They want him back because he's going to make them a lot of money. And these companies are in business to make money. They're businesses, you know? So the question is, will there be a network that'll gamble on her and say, hey, we can get enough sponsors and we can make money off of her? If that's the case, somebody will bring her back. If they don't think they're going to make enough money and there's going to be sponsor backlash and people pulling out, what was the thing where the guy was losing all the sponsors?
Papa John's? No.
Was it Hannity? Somebody was losing a bunch of sponsors on Fox News and they pulled the plug.
Glenn Beck.
I don't know. Either way. Glenn Beck lost some, but yeah. Yeah. Might have been a woman.
And I know what you're saying.
Some woman's show. Greta, I don't know. Who cares?
But Laura Ingraham had some stuff, but she survived it. But, yeah. You know, but here's the thing. That's fine. I just don't think that's really what's happening. Like, I know that the money talks, and again, as a general rule, I think it's safe to say that, you know, if it makes money, they'll do what they can. I do think that we're in a weird time, though, where people seem to be really just
sabotaging shit because they want to rewrite the rules. Like, there's no excuse for why Roseanne hit the air, did as well as it did. Why weren't there 10 more shows? There should have been 10 shows in the hopper, all trying to appeal to conservative America. The moment that happened, that should have... That, I mean, if you look at the way TV networks are with every other thing that ever does well, one game show does well, and suddenly they all have 37 game shows. We still have American Idol spinoffs. But, I don't... It's just weird, and I think a lot of this stuff is just fake. I think there's this outrage industry, and I mean, I've seen guys like Jesse Jackson do it for years, where this... They tell these companies, hey, if you don't pull out, we're going to boycott you, Coca-Cola. And Coca-Cola is like, we don't want this bad press because that'll hurt our sales. So they just always give in. But I don't think there's any evidence that their sales ever get hurt. Like, yeah. Ever. I don't think that, I think people have, it's, you know, it's a chicken or the egg thing, I guess, in some respects. They don't want to take the chance. And I get it. If the sponsors pull out, you can't make your money. I just think some of these sponsors just grow a pair of balls and just be like, no, we're okay, because especially in this day and age, all you have to do is what they did with, like, somebody did with Laura Ingraham, where, like, they went off the air, they pulled their sponsorships for, like, a week or two, and then they came back. And they said, like, their policy is basically, like, when shit gets hot, we just pull up no matter what the controversy is. It's like, right. That's all you have to do. There's a lot of money. I saw Big Fox kind of talked about this a little bit when they're talking about WWE, and they basically said, like, we're not ashamed of you. We want to run with you and milk you and make money off of you. And I thought there's an attitude amongst some executives. It seems to be more on, like, the Fox Corporation just in general. They've always had a little more outlaw programming from The Simpsons and all that stuff. They always seem to be like they've always been a little willing to appeal to people. And frankly, Roseanne feels like a Fox show anyways. I don't know what he's doing at ABC.
It's funny because couldn't conservatives say they're going to boycott ABC or whatever former sponsors Roseanne had? Like, couldn't it go both ways?
It could.
You know
but
what I mean?
Is,
like, that's
no, it, it can, but for the most part, I think some of that is, look, some of that stuff is changing, but I would say that historically conservatives have never been, I think by nature conservatives tend not to be vocal protesting types. That seems to be more of a younger liberal. You know, they're the people out in the streets and doing all this stuff. The conservatives are one, want your kids get a job and stop, you know, doing this stuff and causing a ruckus. So I think they tend to just be the types don't rock the boat anyways. And, you know, I think a lot of them have just stopped watching. These ratings are down everywhere. People are, all of a sudden, you know, I don't want to say conservatives are watching Netflix. That's kind of dumb. But all of a sudden, once we've had more options, as soon as, like, you didn't have to watch NBC, everybody said, oh, yeah, I don't want to watch this shit. It's amazing how much people only watch stuff for generations because they had no options. As soon as people had options, they said, yep, I'm going to watch nothing but golf all day, and I have a channel for it. Suck my dick.
You mentioned Bill Maher earlier. I saw something on Twitter. People were giving him shit for comparing Trump to an orangutan. Like his orange skin color.
This, like, is so stupid.
I agree, but it's like each side has to have some bullshit argument against the other side. Like, I think we both agree that, like, the Jarrett comment, like, comparing her to an ape was probably ill-advised and could be construed as racist. Whether that's how she meant it or not, it's on Twitter, it's written. It's like comedians can get in trouble on Twitter because Are they telling a joke or are they sharing their personal opinion? You don't fucking know half the time unless it's all personal opinion or if it's all just jokes. If there's any in between, if there's play with both, it's hard to know what she's claiming it was a joke. But if you just read that tweet, you're like, holy shit, she's saying this black lady with a monkey. You know?
Here's the thing. Anytime you compare anyone to a monkey, just because of the word monkey just automatically seems like a black thing. Yeah, I would agree. Like, when I heard it, I was like, first my brain said, I honestly thought people were way more offended that she called her a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm like, that seems like she's a terrorist. Like, the Planet of the Apes, like, oh, whatever.
And the man.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I come back down to is just I don't think anybody actually cares.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the people who really watch the show probably even knew about this.
Right.
I think if the crazy right wing conspiracy thing is kind of like I think the people running ABC never wanted her show to succeed. I don't think they like those viewers as people. I think they look at the flyover states, and I think there's been a lot of people looking for an excuse to get rid of her. I just don't think that they want her around. She's a pain in the ass, probably, and now she'll go back to doing who knows whatever. It's fucking Roseanne. Like, really, none of this is out of character for Roseanne. And I think what really gets me down the most about this with her is that she came out and gave a real apology.
Right.
Like, she was just kind of like, I'm really sorry, like, I didn't mean, like, and you could tell, like, she's the one writing this stuff, and it wasn't like she had to get huddled down, like, she's even been kind of like, I didn't mean this, like, I really do think that, I've seen somebody say, like, this should have been a teachable moment. I hate that phrase, but it should have been. Like, people should have been like, this is how you handle it, instead of, we get our pitchforks, and again, it's just a bunch of white hipster types from Vox going, yeah, we got one.
Yeah, I mean, since then, since her apology, I don't know if you've looked at her Twitter feed at all. She's retweeting some fucking idiots.
Yeah, she's going back. You know, she's going back hard. Yeah,
it's funny. She's like, now you guys really have me thinking, and it's just like, dude, like, if you're gonna
Kills
be sorry, you can try to go with it and sell that, and if that's what you're gonna do, but. She's retweeting all sorts of shit with, like, I don't even know, with Harvey Weinstein and stuff. I'm going through her feed now. It's like, oh, my God.
Everybody does this. Everybody does that thing where, like, you say something, you really didn't mean to offend somebody. You're like, oh, I'm sorry. And if the other person doesn't accept the apology right away, if they kind of, like, start giving you shit, you're like, dude, look, I apologize. It's real easy to get defensive on something when, like, your apology was kind of like you being, like, I'm not, like, apologetic in the sense that I thought I did something wrong. I'm apologizing because I've offended you, and I don't want a human being to feel bad. Like, I'm sorry that I inadvertently did something that made you feel bad. But if you don't understand that it was inadvertent, I will fucking punch you in the throat.
I'm just questioning her how she's handling it now. It's just like,
well, I think she drinks a lot and takes a lot of pills, so I don't think it's going to get any better.
That was the other thing. Did you see she blamed it on Ambien?
Yeah, and look, that's a fair defense. That really is a fair defense. I don't care what people say. You'll do weird shit on Ambien. Like, I won't take Ambien anymore for that reason.
The Mar one that he was getting shit for was kind of Trump to an orangutan. But, like,
he looks like an orangutan.
He's a little orange. But,
yeah!
The other conservative thing was, like, Mar did that and nothing happened to him. Like, well, his show did get canceled because he was talking shit that the terrorists weren't cowards in 2001.
Yeah.
It's like, sometimes, I guess people can, obviously, Marlene's left, but, dropped the N-bomb and everybody was pissed off.
No,
at him
like,
on TV.
I like, saw somebody.
Mars fucked up too and is taking heat for it.
Oh, I saw somebody on the right on Twitter kind of say something like, if we have to go after somebody in the left with this stuff, can we maybe not go after the one guy who still sometimes stands up for free speech?
Yeah.
Like, he's the last guy on the left. Like, you know, the left has taken a hard turn away from, like, being free speech absolutist, whereas Bill Maher is still out there like, no, man, you can say anything. He's got that old school atheist, hardcore, just, like, keep out of my life thing.
Relatable. Moving along. Are you familiar with the Pusha T Drake feud?
Yeah, that sounds like something I know a lot about.
Okay. So, both rappers, okay? Drake did this diss song of Pusha T, calling him the old and whatever, nothing major. Then Pusha T came out with this song where he talks about Drake's son, who no one knows he had, and that the mom is a former porn star, and Drake has kept the kid hidden. And apparently Drake was going to start, like, his own clothing line with Adidas. And he mentioned that, and that the kid was going to be part of the ad campaign. And Drake has just gone totally radio silent and vanished. No one seems to be able to find Drake at this point, or know what he's thinking. This is all over Twitter and social media the last couple days. I would recommend you listen to the song, because it's pretty funny. He just totally buries Drake in it.
I don't know, man. I don't like when guys cross lines like that. That's like, that feels like doxing. It just, man, to me, you don't cross the line. But then again, fucking grown men doing diss tracks and stuff. Like,
Drake did mention Pusha T's fiance in his first song, so Pusha T felt it was fair game.
So be it. I don't know, man. If you don't want to get in the fire, don't play with kerosene.
The song that Pusha T did was called The Story of Adidon. And he alleges that Drake, 31, fathered a son with a former adult actress named Sophie Brusso. Drake was photographed with Brusso in January 2017. In May 2017, she claimed she was pregnant with his child, TMZ reported, and alleged that he had urged her to have an abortion. At the time, Drake's rep told TMZ, "This woman has a very questionable background. She has admitted to having multiple relationships. We understand she may have problems getting into the United States. She's one of many women claiming he got them pregnant. If it is, in fact, Drake's child, which he does not believe, he would do the right thing by the child." Source close to Drake voiced serious doubts to Page Six that he was the father of Brusso's child, but said that if he was, he'd step up for the kid. Pusha referenced the scandal in his track. "Since you name-dropped my fiancé, let him know who you chose as your Beyoncé. Sophie knows better. Ask your baby mother. Cleaned her up for Instagram, but the stench is on her. A baby's involved. It's deeper than rap. We talk in character. Let me keep with the facts. You are hiding a child. Let that boy come home. Deadbeat motherfucker playing Border Patrol."
Wow. Who gives a shit? I mean, I want to care, but it's fucking Drake. He was on, like, Mickey Mouse Club or whatever, and I never understand, like, why Drake is not just the biggest outcast in all of hip-hop. He seems like such the anti-hip-hop. He's a dork who pretends like he's part of the basketball team, but he's not. He's Mickey Mouse Club stuff or whatever. Like, just go away, Drake. You got one name, and you're from Canada. What? You're from Canada. Come on, I'm blacker than you.
Pusher goes on, "Adonis is your son, and he deserves more than Adidas press run. That's real. Love that baby. Respect that girl. Forget she's a porn star. Let her be your world."
Jeez.
So good. It's so good. Because it's like,
Why are these people doing this?
None of this shit's even out there. It's like, totally, like, ruined Drake's... not ruined his life, but, like, he was keeping this pretty quiet. I don't think many people knew about this, even though there was a TMZ story a year ago. Apparently, he's got this secret kid no one knows about. He's, like, one of the biggest stars in the world. I know we're kind of making fun of him, but the guy's, like, the biggest selling artist in the world for the last 10 years. He's a big star, and it's like, man, to keep this hidden all this time. We know more about GSP's half-black kid than we do Drake.
That's true.
We just totally buried him. Anyway, keep an eye out for that. It's good. It's a good feud in the hip-hop world. IHOP allegedly refused to... IHOP has allegedly refused to serve an armless boy who eats with his feet.
Florida?
Arkansas.
I thought about going stereotypical South, but I'm like, God, this is a cheap joke. Let's go with the Florida joke. Yeah, Arkansas, that's good.
In Arkansas, I don't know why I'm having a hard time with this. An Arkansas mom says workers at a local IHOP refused to allow her son, who was born without arms, to have breakfast at the restaurant because he eats with his feet. Alexis Bancroft, 25, told local news that her three-year-old boy, William, learned in therapy to eat by sitting on a table and using his feet. But when Bancroft and her husband took their kids to an IHOP in Hot Springs for a pancake breakfast Saturday, the location's general manager was not happy with the eating technique. She told the family that William couldn't touch the syrup container because of a health department regulation. When we got there, I carried him in. I took him to the bathroom and washed his feet so he could eat, Bancroft said. I asked her, do you ask all of your customers if they wash their hands before they touch the syrup containers? The family was offended and left immediately, she said.
Okay, this is not quite as bad as it sounds like at first. Just don't put your feet on the syrup container. I'm sorry, that's a reasonable request. If your kid doesn't have hands and he's been eating with his feet, you should have some idea of how the public is going to react to that. Like, it's, I guess you're trying to show him that he's not abnormal, he can do anything he wants, but come on, he walks around on them. You know, it's your feet. I don't care if you just walk, you carried him into the bathroom and washed off his feet. What? That's weird. I don't want to look over. If I looked over and I saw somebody with their feet on the table, seriously, he's using his monkey feet here to use the syrup? Seriously? That's impossible. You know, you have to press that little thing at the top and tip it just right so it comes out. You can hold it. You're not doing that with your feet. That's some bullshit. Is he using a knife and fork? If you have to eat with your feet, why would you eat any food like pancakes or something that uses syrup? That's messy. I have hands and I don't want to eat that because I get it on me. How covered in syrup and sticky, healthy awfulness from maple trees are you? This little three-year-old kid is probably retarded with no hands, eating his feet on the table in Arkansas, and we're all supposed to be surprised. I mean, come on. What are the odds of the kid wearing overalls, no shirt, just the overalls, eating with his feet in Arkansas at an IHOP? Oh, yeah.
See, I had a different reaction. My take was, his kid has no arms, his wife is awful, his parents are struggling,
well,
probably
that, yeah,
trying to take care of this kid every day. Just let him eat on the table with his feet. He can clean the syrup after. Like, give these people a break. They've got to tough enough with this. That was my
reaction. It depends to me on how it was approached. Like,
if that was my shift and I was on the manager, I would not have said shit to those people. You know what I mean?
I probably wouldn't have either.
Throw the fucking syrup containers out after. Who gives a shit? Like, give these people a fucking break. Why give them a hard time? They've got a hard enough time as it is.
True, but we should only give breaks to people that deserve it. And people that would allow their three-year-old kid to put his feet on the syrup container are not people that deserve it. What it should have been is the crippled kid should have said, could you put it like in a saucer for me so I could have some syrup and not be a sanitation risk? And then they should have said, Jesus thinks we're all special. How about you just use your feet and we'll set that one aside for you. We're going to put it here in the back, put your name on it, and every time you come into this IHOP, you get your own personal feet syrup.
That would have been a nice touch. It's awesome, because this is on my favorite site, the New York Post, and then they've got a whole section called More on IHOP, and it goes, IHOP calls diner N-word on receipt, apologizes with $10 gift card. We're not racist,
wait,
IHOP.
Wait. Roseanne makes an off-color joke that she may or may not have known was even racist, and she loses a multi-million dollar TV show. IHOP calls someone a nigger, and they give them a $10 gift card? I'm sorry, but I'm not a big believer in reparations, but if you give out reparations with more than a $10 gift card for the N-word, that's not a fair trade-off.
Other IHOP stories. We're not racist. IHOP manager denies discrimination after black teens ask to pay before eating. IHOP server tells black teens to pay up before eating. And lastly, IHOP waiter attacks robber with black belt martial arts skills.
All right, that thing about making the black kids pay, everybody's going to think that's racist. You want to see true reality, true market forces in play. There's a restaurant around here, I think it's a Red Lobster actually, could not get people to work there because it was in a black area and nobody tipped. And, like, nobody tipped, so nobody would work. They closed down a restaurant because black people are bad at tipping. So I understand making them pay in advance. That's why you give them a $10 gift card, though, because when they have the $10 gift card, they can only use it at the IHOP, so they're not going to worry about paying in advance. They're just going to put it on the card.
Yeah, you can't do that. In other news, another good one. That made me laugh. I'm assuming you don't do a lot of yard work, do you?
Actually, two weekends ago, I dug up a rose bush. This past weekend, I took that same area and reseeded it. I dug up a 50-pound rock from our backyard that was getting in the way. I replaced the door hinge on it.
Hang on. You dug up a 50-pound rock that was in the way. If it was under the ground, what was it in the way of?
One of our gates. The ground over the years has shifted a little bit, and this rock has started to protrude and knock the gate up a little bit.
Huh.
And so it was eventually destroying it. So what it had already wrecked the lock on the gate. So I had to go to Home Depot and get a new lock. Replace that, and then dig out this rock so it wouldn't be there. And I had some soil left over from the grass, and so I'm trying to fill in this giant hole we have now. So the gate's not all that effective. It could barely keep a puggle out, but that's it.
The reason I ask you this is a guy has found a new way to get the weeds out of his yard. This is Springfield, Ohio. Authorities say a homeowner trying to kill troublesome weeds with a torch has burned down his garage. Springfield News Sun reports Springfield Township firefighters in central Ohio were called to a home around 4 a.m. Thursday for a detached garage engulfed in flames. No one was injured. Fire officials learned the man had been trying to eliminate weeds around the garage. They're calling the blaze an accident. The destroyed garage held tools and appliances. Fire officials estimate the loss at between $10,000 and $15,000. Just pick them. Don't light them on fire, would be my advice.
That's one way to fire up a blunt, I guess. But hey, that's how a man approaches things. I guarantee you, no sentence is ever involved. And then he tried to set fire to everything instead of just picking it. And then it had a woman do it. It's never a woman.
Speaking of women, social media users were horrified following a viral video that showed a woman shaving her legs at a public pool in Florida.
Oh yeah. That monster. That big husky-looking walrus.
The video showed an unidentified woman sitting by the edge of a pool, shaving her legs as children swam nearby. The children did not appear to notice the quick shave. The people who captured the moment on video were heard saying, "Oh my God, this lady is shaving in the pool. I hope she don't shave her hoo-ha next," the woman recording was heard saying.
People like her, it's kind of like the guys at the Starbucks who wanted to sit there and didn't buy anything, where, like, when I hear about stories like this, I am mortified. Because I'm like, who would do this? It's so just rude. Forget about whether it's disgusting or whatever. It's just, who would think? Who would ever for a moment think it is okay to just go to a restaurant, any business, and just sit down and not purchase something? That boggles my mind. I know other people do it. I think they're weird, too. It's just like, who would ever think, I'm going to shave my legs at the public pool? You have to bring a razor with you. You have to go out of you have to plan for that. She planned to shave her legs at the pool. She thought, I gotta shave my legs. Rather than use my bathtub like a normal person, I'm gonna take my kids to the pool and use the chlorinated piss water to shave my legs. Fucking animal.
Do you know where this happened?
Florida.
Correct.
Tallahassee, I don't know.
It was not immediately clear where the public pool was located or if there were any rules posted by the pool. Orlando Sentinel reported Florida has extensive statutes regarding pool safety, which includes swimming.
You don't need to have a public rule or statute.
There's a rule that says you need to bathe before entering a pool and no spitting or bodily fluids in the pool. However, there appear to be no statutes against shaving in a pool.
Yeah, but I know the showering before you get in the pool rule. I don't really know why, but fine, I've heard that one. But you don't need to have a rule to tell someone not to shave their legs in a public swimming pool. This is like whenever they find out somebody's been found having sex with a dead body, and they're like, we don't actually have a law against this. Like, there's just some things that nobody thought to make a law for because, duh.
And just if the person who's going to commit these crimes is going to do it, they're not going to be real aware of the law while they're...
It's just like, yeah, they would have passed House Bill 32 and she would have, been notified and remembered, oh, that's right, they made it against the law to shave your legs in the swimming pool.
This is also on the New York Post. This is filed under four categories. Florida, gross, pools, and WTF. That's a good combination of what this story really was.
Yeah.
The headline here reads, Grumpy Old Man Gets Revenge on Former Pal by Pumping Poop into His Home.
Sure.
Let me tell you more.
Yeah.
An elderly Brit whose relationship with his pal went down the toilet saved his feces for several weeks in a revolting scheme in which he pumped the excrement into the man's home. Jeffrey Holroyd Doveton, 75, of Rotherham, told police he thought Donald Wicks had contributed to his divorce more than 2 years ago and ruined my life. Armed with his stinky load, Holroyd Doveton traveled to Braintree, Essex, to carry out the vile attack on the home of Wicks and his husband, Richard, while they were away on New Year's Day. It would seem that the defendant defecated into a container and kept that for 6 to 8 weeks, Prosecutor Leslie Small said. He had constructed a homemade pump and used that pump through the letterbox. Using that pump, he has pushed the excrement through the letterbox, causing that to splatter over the hallway, up the stairs, and onto the back wall, she said. Surveillance footage captured the vengeful pooper in the act outside the couple's home, Small added. Wicks described the incident in court as despicable and disgusting. It immediately caused me to feel very anxious and unable to sleep due to stress, he said. I felt my personal space, our home, had been invaded.
Yeah, it had. I don't feel like it wouldn't be the stress of the situation so much as the toxic odor that would prevent me from sleeping, but I guess some people have different concerns about these incidents.
Holroyd Devkin pleaded guilty at Ipswich Magistrates Court to causing more than $5,000 in damage. His lawyer, Emily Hughes, said he felt isolated and depressed after his marriage failed and was incredibly sorry for his actions. Judge Michael Cadman apparently found the defense a load of crap and slapped Holroyd Doveton with a suspended jail sentence along with 80 hours of unpaid work. He also imposed a restraining order that bars Holroyd Doveton from contacting Wicks or venturing within a mile of his home. This is a pretty horrific offense. I think it's almost as bad as I have seen in my 30 years as a magistrate.
Well, imagine if he had just been running around out for a jog, maybe, and decided just to take a shit in his yard.
And lastly, gotta get it here. Give me a second. This is an older story that I forgot to talk about a while ago. It involves a PGA golfer. I don't think we ever talked about this. PGA star Lucas Glover's wife was arrested for violently attacking the golfer over his poor showing at the Players' Championship, authorities said. Kristen Glover was arrested Saturday on battery charges at a home the couple rented in Ponte Vedra, Florida, not far from the competition at Sawgrass TPC. The 36-year-old is accused of causing bodily harm when she forcefully attacked the 2009 U.S. Open winner and her mother-in-law in front of their two kids. When the officers arrived at the scene, Lucas told them that, according to authorities, when he plays a bad round of golf, Christopher proceeds to start an altercation with him, telling him how he is a pussy and a loser.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. He's a cuck.
He said she then continued berating him about how he needs to fire everyone and how he'd better win or her and the kids would leave him and he would never see the kids again. Whoever made
I bet
the
she's way
cut,
more attractive than him.
Whoever made the initial cut in the prestigious tournament but a 78 in Saturday's third round made him a 54-hole victim. The 38-year-old golfer, however, tried to convince officers not to take his wife to the slammer, according to the Daily Mail. Despite his pleas, deputies arrested Krista because the golfer and his mother suffered visible lacerations. The golf star responded Tuesday on social media to the domestic violence report. Regrettably, although Krista was charged, we are comfortable that the judicial system is able to address what actually happened, and Krista will be cleared in this private matter. We thank you for respecting our privacy as we work through the situation.
That's an awkward sentence to have to write one day. By the way, you know what she said right before she hit him every time?
Four.
Four. That's
when
it.
When deputies handcuffed her, she became physically aggressive and tried to escape the arresting officer. She then put up a struggle as officers attempted to place her in the patrol car, wrapping her legs around the door and frame, according to the police report. Once inside the vehicle, she started screaming and kicking the door. Wait till the tour hears about this, Krista reportedly said. You will lose your job. This is why cops get shot in the face. Wait till I talk with the judge. You're fucking fired over this. The golf pro's wife was in St. John's County Jail, where she was released Sunday on $2,500 bond. She also faces charges for resisting arrest.
She is one classy dame. Yeah. He got a real winner there. I bet she and Tiger Woods' ex-wife hang out.
She would probably hang out with Tiger. Oh, she wrecked Tiger Woods' car with the golf club, right?
Yep.
That was crazy. I remember when that happened. Oh, that was pretty wild. Because it looked like he crashed the car, but nobody knew why at first. Remember that?
Yeah. Then it turns out that she just went old school, angry housewife, finds out your husband's cheating. Oh, yeah? You want to cheat on me? And you start hitting his car with his golf clubs. I mean, that has happened to so many middle-aged men in this country. Their wife finds out that they've been cheating on them with somebody else, and they hit his favorite prize car with his favorite golf clubs. Tiger Woods is the whitest old man who ever lived.
On that note, anything else going on in the world?
Nope.
Okay, me neither. Anything coming up on halfguarded.com?
Nope.
Okay. Oh, how was the yeah?
Amazing.
So that was kind of a pick-me-up after Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't played a show in Chicago apparently in 9 years. And I'd never seen them before. They've always been a dream of mine, but they've, you know, more or less kind of stopped touring. They don't really do much anymore. And they're only playing like 5 or 6 gigs this year, it looks like. And when I saw they were here, I was like, oh my gosh. And they sounded exactly as I dreamed they would. The show looked like how I thought it would. They were so good. I was just like, this is how it should be. I'm like, this is music, man. And then I caught an Uber home, and I fell asleep in my bed eating part of a hot dog.
Which part of a hot dog?
The middle part.
Weird way to do it. Yeah, they were Maps, right? That was their big song?
Yep. Yep.
No, I remember that one. You don't hear much about them anymore. Are they in hiatus or something?
Yeah, I think they're basically kind of done. Like, they all kind of got their own projects, and they were always kind of like an artsy, almost borderline indie rock group anyways, so I'm just grateful for what they've given me.
On that note,
of a hot dog.
On a positive note, we will call it a show here. Thank you for listening. Maybe back next week. I got some stuff going on, but someone will be here next week for you, I promise, whether it's me and Mike, or just Mike, or just me, or somebody. we are here for you. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.